Invite Bart for the second.
Okay, thanks a lot. Also to the organizers for inviting me. It's nice to be here, and it looks like an amazing event as well. What I would like to talk about today is mediation of mutual cooperation, and I kind of tweaked my title a little bit by also having a subtitle saying where anarchism and neoliberalism meet, question mark. Now, if we assess the current neoliberal discourse relating to participation, we are very much led to believe that sharing is participating. Social networking platforms, for instance, encourage us to I-share everything. We are invited to share our photos, our inner thoughts, the wild adventures of our pets and children, the news articles we find interesting, or the ones that we get angry about, our friends, and also even some sites even encourage us to share our lovers. The only thing we're not allowed to share is copyright-protected digital content, but that's another debate which I do not wish to go into in this talk. At the same time, paradoxically, sharing can and is also projected by some as one of the most important alternative models of exchange juxtaposed to competition, added value and profit-making, all inherent to capitalism. And from this perspective, sharing is approached not in an individualistic way, as is the case with the neoliberal mantra of sharing yourself, but in terms of sharing resources and relating to participation in collective arrangements. And I would like to call this modes of mutual cooperation with a view of sharing resources, and they constitute, I would argue, one of the most interesting and most prevalent alternatives to neoliberal and capitalist values, or don't they? Question mark. So in this presentation, I will argue that while mutual cooperation does present an important alternative to the capitalist system, we can also observe, as I just pointed out, that neoliberalism and capitalism is very apt at co-opting not only the language or the discourse of sharing and cooperation, but also the practices aiming to commodify mutual cooperation and the sharing practices. But let me first turn to the theoretical foundation of mutual cooperation and sharing common resources. In the book The Struggle for Existence in Human Society, Thomas Henry Huxley, a forefather of Aldous Huxley, argued that a Hobbesian war of each against all and the principle of the survival of the fittest created the need for society and for structures to tame the beast inside us. However, based on his travels and studies in biology, the Russian scientist Pyotr Kropotkin found it difficult to reconcile himself with such a dark, pessimistic, and above all, rather deterministic view of nature and of humanity. Kropotkin's own scientific research into evolution and human nature showed, on the contrary, that usages and customs, as he pointed out, created by mankind for the sake of mutual aid, mutual defense, and peace in general, were precisely elaborated by the nameless multitude. And it was these customs that enabled man to survive his struggle for existence in the midst of extremely hard natural conditions. So Kropotkin's argued that modes of mutual cooperation amongst equals were more prevalent in human nature than models based on competition. Humans, he pointed out, tend to develop a sense of justice at the same time and create social communities because of the need for sociability. Kropotkin did, however, not reject the competitive form of struggle, but he pointed out that mutual aid is as much a law of nature as mutual struggle is. It has to be stressed, though, here that mutual aid and cooperation is not merely based on naive altruism. Social customs come about to ensure that no individual is free-riding and to protect also the collective pro-social from the antisocial behavior of some. And while altruism is seen to play an important part in modes of cooperation based on mutual aid, an investment in cooperation, i.e. some form of reciprocity, is equally important. as Dawkins also pointed out, a kind of tit-for-tat expectation can be observed, which rewards acts of cooperation and punishes a lack of reciprocity. And this then ultimately ensures that everybody in the collective prospers from mutual cooperation. And to some extent, we could say or point to the work of the anthropologist Maus in his study on into traditional gift economies, whereby he argued that these traditional gift economies are based on reciprocity, and this also tend to reinforce the positions of those who are able to give the most, which then ultimately leads to the cementing of social dependencies and the reinforcement of existing power relations. Along the same line, Sennett defines cooperation as an exchange in which the participants benefit from the encounter. However, as Belk quite rightly outlines, we must acknowledge here that sharing resources is not entirely the same as gifting. We give or receive a gift, but we take what is being shared. And as such, sharing has much less expectations of reciprocity linked to it, he argues. Now, despite these issues around reciprocity and the power relations inherent to giving and sharing, modes of mutual cooperation challenge the common perception that development and advancement is intrinsically linked to competition, greed, individualism, and ultimately to the survival of the fittest. Kropotkin's work and ideas live on today and serve as an inspiration for a variety of scholars from a diversity of fields and disciplines to make sense of a variety of practices of mutual cooperation. In the literature, we can see the work of Kropotkin being used in relation to mutual cooperation in developing contexts in terms of, for example, sharing risks, mutual cooperation in self-help. Alcohol Anonymous, for example, is a case that has been linked to mutual aid a lot. Mutual cooperation after disasters and natural disasters in traditional cooperatives, and mutual cooperation also in activist autonomous zones. Modes of mutual cooperation are, as so many other aspects of the social today, increasingly mediated through ICTs. And these information and communication technologies not only facilitate modes of mutual cooperation, but increasingly become constitutive of them as well. And this implicates the role of networks and questions the common presumptions that modes of mutual cooperation need strong ties and social exchange. While this is certainly the case for certain forms of mutual cooperation, computer or mobile mediated network power can also rely on the strength of weak or latent or even non-existent ties, all acting in conjunction with a predefined purpose. The weak and latent ties that the internet enable thus contribute to the ability of citizens to participate and to engage in mutual cooperation arrangement and at the same time manage the degree of their involvement. The internet can be seen to both facilitate traditional modes of mutual cooperation as well as produce new modes of mutual cooperation that are internet embedded. And this can be mapped on to the distinction Van Laar and Van Alst made between internet supported and internet based social movements. Kolok also pointed out that the emergence of digital technologies and virtual communities they enable have considerably reduced the costs associated with giving and sharing. And besides this, many of these forms of internet-based and some forms of internet support sharing are firmly embedded in a discourse of the commons and the public domain. And could refer here to the work of Ostrom, Stallman, Lessig, etc. However, we should also distinguish at this level commercial from non-commercial forms of mediated sharing. On the one hand, we can observe modes of collaborative consumption whereby the shared goods are owned by a third party and which tend to be profit-making. We could call these share.com. Here, the reciprocity linked to sharing tends to have a transactional component as well, i.e. money changes hands. On the other hand, there are modes of mutual sharing whereby those participating in the collaborative arrangement own the shared goods. And such initiatives tend to be more not-for-profit or share.org. And here reciprocity can be captured by the notion of share alike. Besides this, apart from enabling forms of sharing that are focused on material goods, the internet also facilitates and supports the sharing of capital and of immaterial resources, such as support, information, and knowledge. It's clear that there's a plethora of mutual cooperation initiatives out there, which we can differentiate according to what is being shared, how is the sharing organized, bottom up or top down, who is actually sharing, and also by the forms of mediation that it takes, be it internet supported or ICT based. Let us first address mediated mutual cooperation practices that are geared towards the sharing of material resources, which situate itself at the level of goods and of consumption. The role of ICTs here is mostly facilitative, and examples are the sharing of cars, books, DVDs, garden tools, couches, the group buying of energy, and fractional, but even also the fractional ownership of private jets and yachts, and I'll come back to that later. It has to be said that most of these examples are organized in a top-down manner and are often profit-making. Let's take the example of car sharing. There are community models such as citycarshare.org in San Francisco, for example, or even state-owned initiatives such as Cambio BE in Belgium, organized by public transport companies. But commercial car sharing services are in many countries much more prominent and dominant. One of the most popular ones is a platform called Zipcar.com. It has about 800,000 members worldwide and owns about 10,000 cars. Now in March this year, Zipcar was bought up by Avis, a giant in the car hire industry. Not-for-profit initiatives tend to be more local and also tend to be more vulnerable when it comes to sustaining them. There is, for example, a website, or there was rather, a website called ecosharing.net, which facilitated the exchange and sharing or even gifting of all sorts of non-luxury goods at a local level. And that website had to cease its activity due to a lack of success. Its URL now directs you to a health and well-being block, wellness block. But there are also examples of success, like FreeCycle, for example, .org, keeping good stuff out of landfills. Another example of a top-down organized form of collaborative consumption, which can also be seen as a form of, as a practice of mutual cooperation, is the group buying of energy-related products. Here we see that local authorities and even sometimes trade unions and political parties, as is the case with the organization Stronger Together in Belgium, organize the group buying of petrol to heat the home, gas, electrical bikes, wood for stoves, solar energy panels, and thereby reducing the costs for those citizens that participate in the group buying. Like I pointed out, there's also the example of fractional ownership of really high-end luxury goods, and this is an interesting example. The site cnetco.com offers its clientele a piece of the yachting lifestyle in return for a modest $80,000 to $164,000 a year. This example, quite extreme in one sense, does point to a more broader issue, I would argue, of class in relation to these sharing practices. So who can afford to share? Apart from the group buying, most other forms of sharing material goods often tend to be very middle-class oriented and very urban-centered. Besides the sharing of material resources, we also need to acknowledge the importance of capital resources, i.e. money and the sharing practices that relate to capital and production. Most of the sites facilitating the sharing of capital qualify themselves as social enterprises and are geared towards the stimulation of cultural production. For example, we can here refer to examples such as Kickstarter.com or Crowdfunder.co.uk. The latter site, Crowdfunder, was set up by the advertising company that worked amongst other for Endemol, the production company of Big Brother. But it's also at this level that we can find an interesting and truly bottom-up initiative. RollingJubilee.org, for example, is a spin-off of the Occupy Wall Street protests. Historically, a jubilee is a religious event when debts are being cancelled. and Rolling Jubilee abuses the capitalist system whereby banks sell off bad debt at a fraction of the value to companies specialized in aggressively pursuing the debtors. With donations of participants, Rolling Jubilee then subsequently buys up bad debts from banks, often linked to lending to pay healthcare bills, for example, and subsequently abolishes these debts rather than attempting to get it back. Besides the sharing of material and capital resources, we can also distinguish the sharing of immaterial resources such as time, support, knowledge, expertise, software code. In general, we could argue that more bottom-up initiatives emerge at this level, an online support group, the development of wikis, open access journals, open source software development, etc. However, at the same time, we can also observe how many of these forms of bottom-up not-for-profit initiatives to share lay expertise, knowledge, software, etc., are also in their turn being co-opted by the very forces these practices often aim to resist. The website dailystrength.org, for example, enables the establishment of online support networks in relation to health issues, but it is hosted by sharecare.com, a platform that is, and I quote, dedicated to connecting consumers with industry experts and all other knowledgeable consumers in order to educate, empower, and continue the conversation of health. In essence, websites like this are recruiting devices for health professionals in a way, quote again, to successfully market your practice and acquire and retain valuable patient relationships. Despite the open architecture of Wikipedia over the years, it also has developed a whole set of rules and guidelines for people to share knowledge resources, and in many ways it can now be seen to be a combination of both top-down control and bottom-up participation. However, Wikipedia is still not-for-profit and increasingly a more trustworthy and very useful resource. On the other side of the spectrum, as we all know as academics, the increased demands for open access to knowledge are also abused in the world of commercial academic publishing to promote a publishing model that transfers the cost of publication, or the processing cost as it's called, to the authors, the so-called gold model. Now, while the free and open source movement shares and gifts software code, it operates, in contrast to file sharing, very much within the copyright paradigm rather than outside it. Furthermore, as many have noted, certainly the more business-friendly open source licenses have led to big corporate actors using open source models to create software and embed it in proprietary code or commercialize it. This is, according to some, one of the main reasons for the success of open source. So this brings me to what to make of all these different sharing practices. Returning to the theoretical foundations of mutual aid and cooperation being embedded in civil society, we can observe that there are a wide variety of actors with very different intentions that are active in this realm. If we assess the aptness of mutual cooperation practices to escape capitalism, and often if we want to critique neoliberalism, the question we get back is, yeah, but what is your alternative? Well, often this is being told to be one of the alternatives, but at the same time, we also have to admit that it is also only partially an alternative. Alternative models often tend to be crowded out by commercial social enterprise models, especially when it concerns the sharing of material and capital resources. Reciprocity in the case of sharing of material goods also tend to be transactional and geared towards getting a better price rather than challenging capitalism. When we assess the anarchist and autonomous antecedents of mutual aid and cooperation, we also see that often structures such as NGOs, unions, parties, and indeed also companies are organizing or enabling the sharing practices, and that a lack of such structures may impede the development of such initiatives. On the other hand, at this level we can also see how anarchism and neoliberalism meets and partly overlaps. By propagating models whereby citizens may take responsibility to care for one another and to self-organize themselves in order to deliver services which used to be provided by the welfare state, for example. Another question that has emerged here is who participates in these initiatives? It appears that besides the extreme case of fractional ownership, mostly middle classes participate in modes of mutual cooperation. And this applies across all forms of resources, material, capital, and immaterial. As Burroughs point out, for example, in the field of what they call wired welfare, this may tend to advantage a middle class who have the time, the reflexivity, inclination, and resources to best exploit it, and in doing so, gain systematic advantage. Also in terms of open source software development or sharing of knowledge, is mainly an activity of the educated elite. Finally, all this also points to some extent to the deeply hegemonic, post-hegemonic stage we currently find ourselves in, whereby it has become almost impossible to escape capitalism and neoliberalism. Even the bottom-up and more resistance modes of sharing, such as Rolling Jubilee or the free software movement, operate squarely within the parameters of capitalism, using capitalism against capitalism, gaming the system, from within the system, rather than radically challenging or constituting a radical alternative to it. And despite this, the potentials for alternative models of exchange are there, and I would argue need to be brought out more, and it also need to be further researched, especially in relation to sustainability and scaling them up. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.